Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today on Farmer Friday. I'm Darren Hefty. I'll be joined by my brother Brian today. We're going to be taking your calls and questions all throughout the show. Our phone lines will be open at 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. We'd love to hear from you today and chat with you a little bit. Want to hear what's going on your farm, how you turned out in 2018, and what you're doing right now. Maybe you're in the shop working on some equipment. Maybe you're getting some seed in place. Maybe you're getting some of your other plans set. If you've got questions as you're working on that, you can sure send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Getting a lot of fertility questions, a lot of soil samples coming in, and guys just wondering, hey, what do you think about this recommendation? What do you think about this strategy? And that's really fun for us because, well, for some of you, you may think, what? That's the least fun thing on the farm. And I think, no, that's the most fun thing. And the cool part is, not only do we get to do it for our own farm, we get to do it on some other farms too. And sometimes we can even dream and say, well, hey, if money was no object here or money was no problem, I'd do all of these things. And other times it's, hey, we've got a $100 budget. What would you do with the first $100 you spent? So it's fun to look at those. Again, radio@agphd.com if you want to send in a fertility plan or a soil sample like that. Also, you can find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. So a lot of different ways to catch up with Brian and me on Farmer Friday. All right, Brian, where'd you like to start a discussion on today's show? Do you want to just jump right into Ag PhD mailbag questions, or you got something you want to talk about?
Well, first of all, I've been working all day on the Secrets of High Yield Fields workshop that we've got coming up on Tuesday.
Oh, man, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that. One of the interesting things that we're going to go through is we've matched up yield to all of our grid points on our farm for soil testing. So in other words, we can start to see trends on, hey, does more potassium pay or does it not? And it's super interesting because this year, for the first time, we decided to do 1 acre grids, 0 to 6 inch depth. We have a lot of data points is what I'm trying to say. We have over 2,000 soil samples. And obviously we have yield from each of those points as well. So correlating those for corn, for beans, super interesting. You're really going to want to see this. Anyway, that's Secrets of High Yield Fields on Tuesday. So that's just a part of what we're doing that day. But we've got a lot of information and soil tests from some of the highest yielding farmers in the world. We're going to talk through a lot of their tips and things we picked up over the years to gaining higher yields, and not just higher yields, but more profit as well. So for details on any of our workshops and to pre-register, and by the way, our workshops coming up both Monday and Tuesday are free. They're right on our farm at the Ag PhD Field Day site. Love to have you there. We got plenty of room, but if you wouldn't mind, just sign up online. That'd be great. So we make sure we have enough food for everybody and enough books for everybody. I'd love to have you. AgPhD.com. All right. Beyond that, Darren, I would just say even though commodity prices stink, I mean, for what I want as a crop farmer, don't get me wrong, it could be a lot worse, but you know, things are kind of tight. I'm still very excited about 2019. One of the things for us in the Western Corn Belt, our dad always used to talk about this. He said, you know, when I've got subsoil moisture, I'm awfully optimistic. When I don't have subsoil moisture, then, you know, I might not always have a decent year, but at least I got a really good chance when I have subsoil moisture. Well, almost everybody I know in the Midwest has subsoil moisture right now. So you might not on your farm, but most people do. And, you know, with us, we've got all kinds of moisture down below the ground. We don't get a lot of rainfall normally, but even without much rain, we can still raise pretty good yield because we got fairly decent soil and everything. So, yeah, I'm really excited for 2019. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
First question here comes from Justin, and he said, my father-in-law has a farm in New Jersey, and I'm trying to help him out on that, and I've sent you samples from one of the fields.
It's been about. You sent me a. Give me a book here.
Yeah, it's been about, well, there's a lot of stuff there. It's been about 10 years since he's really been fertilizing this. So I'm starting off with 1 acre grids, trying to turn things around. I did apply between a ton and a half of ag lime already to the field. So keep that in mind as you take a look at these samples. I got several questions here, but my questions are, where do we go from here?
Hey, first of all, I love 1 acre grids to start with. And if you hear this, you're going to go, oh my goodness, I can't afford 1 acre grids.
Well, and you had to lime. So putting on lime at varying rates, yes, 1 acre grids are the way to go.
Yes. For the first year or two that you do a good job of soil sampling, I like 1 acre grids. After that, if you want to go to 5 acre or whatever, that's fine, because now by then you've had a chance to kind of even the soil out. Or by then you will say, ooh, I haven't had a chance to even the soil out. Maybe I need to stay in 1 acre grids. But you have less chance for screw-ups and a better chance of putting the dollars in the right place when you're in 1 acre grids. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
All right, so you said, I'm wondering about base saturation. I'm wondering about variable rate application or strip till. What are some of the things you would do if this was your farm?
Okay, well, here's the thing. He gave us maps of each individual nutrient. So normally we get soil tests here, and I'm not complaining. I'm just saying normally I get soil tests, and I can see all the data all in one shot. I don't have that here, so I got to go through page by page by page to try to figure out what's going on and go back and forth. So I don't have a good answer for you, Darren, and I'll look at it over the commercial break and see if I can come up with something.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. Once you've had a farm that hasn't had fertility for a while, Brandon and I were just having this discussion today. Not only have you run the nutrient levels down, chances are you've hurt your microbial populations out there too by not having enough food for them. So it's going to take a little bit of time to get it turned around, but it can be turned around in a hurry depending on what your budget is and what practices you're going to do. You mentioned that it's ground that you own, and broadcast fertilizer applications are certainly fine. You can definitely strip till if you had a machine and it was economical for you to do so. So there are quite a few options. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about what you do with ground like this that you're trying to build from the ground up, I guess, to start with. It's Farmer Friday on our show today. Stay tuned.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to GrowSmartRewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show today. We'd love to hear from you at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Clinton on with us right now down in Nebraska. How's it going, Clinton?
Oh, not too bad. How you doing?
Doing well. Doing well. I understand you got a nitrogen question for us.
Yes, I was just wondering, is it helpful or necessary to put a nitrogen stabilizer with your nitrogen when you're injecting it with a colder machine in your fields in the springtime? Is that helpful or necessary?
Yeah, or is it just another big expense on a year where none of us really need another expense? Yeah, I get what you're after, Clint, because we think about these same things. When we're doing stuff in the fall and we've got a long time until that crop's going to need it, we've got winter and freeze up and those kinds of things, but in areas that don't, the further away from when that crop's going to use it, the more likelihood there is that that's going to pay.
Hey, Clinton, let me give you my list. I think I got 8 things here that I usually am thinking about. Nitrogen stabilizers are more likely to pay when nitrogen rates are high, when nitrogen prices are high, in lower cation exchange capacity soils, in other words, in lighter soils, when nitrogen's going to sit on top of the soil. Now, that's not your case if you're going to inject it. When nitrogen is applied far ahead of when it is used, that's what Darren was just talking about. When I got a soil pH outside the range of the sixes, so let's say I've got a soil pH that's 8 or a soil pH that's 5.5, I'm more at risk. When temperatures are warmer, in wetter years, and when you have environmental concerns, like, for example, if you were over a water or in a watershed district where you got really high water tables and that kind of thing, and you're worried about losing it. So anyway, if any of those things are going to pertain to you, or several of those things are going to pertain to you, then we're going to tell you, yeah, a nitrogen stabilizer is pretty likely to pay. If you say, well, you know what, I'm going to inject it, and a lot of it's going to get used pretty quick, I'm running with a pretty low rate, then I'm going to tell you, you know, nitrogen stabilizer probably isn't that big a deal for you. So it kind of depends on your particular situation. So do you have any more thoughts for us? Any more, you know?
By injecting, you're taking away that volatility component.
Right.
And that's out. So you're just worried about leaching and denitrification. And
right.
If you say, well, I've got really sandy soil and I've got a...
What do you have there, Clinton? What's your soil like?
That's clay, or a lot of clay. And it's pretty good black. Down to, say, 6 inches or so, and
yep.
Then it's clay from there on.
Okay. So you don't have super light ground or anything. And how high a rate of nitrogen are you going to put on? With this injection thing, are you talking about this as side dress or ahead of time, or when were you putting this nitrogen on?
Ahead of time, I'll usually put on around 60 gallon to the acre.
Of 28%?
32.
Yeah. Okay. So you're getting close to 200 pounds of nitrogen. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. So if you're doing it ahead of time and you've got a pretty good rate there, if it was me and I was doing that, I don't know. You're starting to get to the point where I'm going to tell you a stabilizer could pay. On the other hand, you know, what a lot of guys have started doing now is they're cutting their early rate back a little bit, and then they're side dressing some, so then they have less risk and less need for the stabilizer. But yeah, when you're throwing 200 pounds all out there at once, it's going to take at least 2, almost 3 months by the time you're using all that. So you've got some risk there for both leaching and denitrification. So we would be a little bit concerned about that, yes.
Is there a certain product that you guys would recommend that's better than any others, or maybe you can't tell me what?
Oh, we talk products all the time here. So I'd just say when we're talking liquid, Instinct 2 is probably the one, Instinct. So that's the Corteva product. That's real good. One of the Agritanes, like Agritane Plus, is pretty good. You've got Nutrisphere N out there. But yeah, Instinct is probably the most popular, wouldn't you say, Darren?
If it's the most popular or not, but there's a lot of different ones out there. And the ones that you don't want are like the basic level Agritane, the new Pennant Max that Corteva has. They're great products, but they're for volatility protection, which you don't need when you're injecting it.
Whereas Instinct is just a leaching and denitrification product, which is what you're looking for.
Yeah. Also, I went to a Pioneer meeting the other day, and they was talking about planning suggestions and stuff, and I think they was more pertaining to anhydrous, but they said when you're planning no-till or whatever, not to plant in that envelope of your where you injected your nitrogen. Is that
yeah,
that pretty much pertain to liquid as well as anhydrous?
Well, how deep are you going to inject the liquid?
Well, I'll probably go 3 to 4 inches, I suppose, about.
Yeah. Okay, so, all right, let's put it this way. If it's anhydrous, yes, I'm really concerned about that. A lot of times, and we've even done this on our own farm, we almost never put anhydrous on in the spring. We only do it in the fall as a general rule. We've done it in the spring a couple times, and then we've done that at an angle just to see what happened, and you could see right where the anhydrous was, and our stand wasn't the best. So, yeah, I mean, we've talked about that for years. So I agree with them on the anhydrous. If it's 28%, it gets more borderline. If you're talking as much nitrogen as you are, I'm a little bit worried about how close that would be to the seed. If you start getting some separation, you know, you're 2, 3, 4 inches off, you could probably get by with that. But, I mean, you're putting a good strong dose there. So would I like it if I had my fertilizer at 4 inches and my seeds planted right over the top at 2 inches and I just put 200 pounds of nitrogen out? I'd be a little concerned, especially if it turns out to be dry. You could very well burn off some of your roots. So, yes, I'd be a little bit worried about it with as high a rate as you're going.
Yeah, the good thing is he's got heavy ground, though, too, and
that helps.
That's going to help
that helps.
You.
Yep, that helps. But, yeah, yeah. I mean, the whole thing, Clinton, that we talk to guys about all the time is we got enough risk in farming as it is. We don't need to add more risk that we create ourselves. So, ideally, yeah, I'd like to. I don't have any problem banding, and I don't have any problem having it relatively close to the row. But we got to be real careful about if it's right there at the seed within an inch or two. We're getting awfully close, especially when you're starting to talk 180 to 200 pounds of nitrogen that you put out there.
Yeah. Okay, I guess that pretty much answers my questions. And thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Clinton. Appreciate it. Best of luck to you here in 2019.
We've got Keith in Illinois with us right now. Keith, how's it going?
Doing fine, Darren. How are you?
Oh, doing well. Doing well. Nice and cool here, and we're hopefully keeping insects and disease under control for a little while with freezing weather. But soon enough, it's going to be spring. How about you? Getting preparations ready for the spring?
Yeah, I think so. We've still got a little bit of planter work to do and a little bit of tillage equipment and tractor work to do, but it's going to come here before you know it.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's coming. I was just talking this morning. I had a radio interview on another program, and they said, how long till you guys be planting? And I said, well, hopefully we'll be planting in 8 weeks, but it's coming pretty quick. It's coming fast. We don't have a lot of time left. So do you have seed on hand yet, or are you still waiting to get that delivered?
It still, of course, got it ordered and everything like that, but it's not on the farm yet.
Yeah, we're starting to see some of the guys in our area starting to take seed deliveries and getting kind of the final pieces in place here. I guess maybe some of the liquid stuff isn't going to come yet till it warms up, but everything that doesn't freeze is starting to get on the farms. It's funny, just before things get all muddy in the spring, try and get it out there while the ground's still firm.
That's right. That's right. We had a little change this year that we're going to try doing in when you talked about the liquid. I'm going to try to put a little bit of magnesium in furrow. I'm in kind of an area where I've got lower magnesium levels and higher calcium levels, and I'm just going to try that. My tissue tests have been showing that I've got some low levels, and I'm just going to see what that does.
Do you know what your tissue test levels are? I know a lot of times guys will say, well, my tissue test says I'm sufficient or I'm low or I'm high, but do you know where you're at? Are you over 0.2 or are you less than that?
Most of the time I'm in that 0.15 to 0.18 range.
Okay. Yeah, that's going to trigger an application, no doubt about that. Yeah, we're fighting that same kind of thing on our farm as well with low magnesium on some of the tissue tests.
We're going to have to debate about that
a little bit
after
Keith,
the break.
Hey, Keith, if you can hold on for a minute, I want to talk to you a little more about that before I get Brian all worked up here. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned. When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. Taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We got Keith on with us right now from Illinois. Keith, thanks for holding through the break.
No problem, Darren.
We may have just started Brian in my first disagreement of the day. Man, we've had this smooth day where Brian's actually like agreed with me on almost everything, so he's been right. And now Brian thinks that I might be wrong, so we're going to have a little battle. But he thinks that you might be okay on magnesium. Is that what you're saying, Brian? And I think, no, Keith's right. He is a little bit low.
Well, he might be okay. I'm not saying he for sure is okay, but I'm saying for us, we see some plant tissue levels in corn at 0.16, 0.18, and we still have really high yield.
Yeah, but
and
we aren't getting...
we have huge levels of magnesium in the soil. I mean, like 1,000 parts per million. So I don't know. And maybe there's something else rather than applying magnesium to having the level higher.
Are you going to do it on a lot of acres, Keith, or are you trying some strips, or what are you doing?
Well, you know, I've got some acres that I'm sitting in the 20 to 22 percent base saturation on mag, so I'm not going to do those acres. But most of my acres are in that 9 to 13 range, so I'm going to do it on those, and those are the ones that I've been doing a lot of tissue tests on. And like I was telling you, they're showing in that 0.15 to 0.18 area, and it and boron are the two things that I'm consistently low in.
Okay.
So that's what I'm going
to
try.
You know, you mentioned base saturation, and a lot of times we'd like to see that 12 or 13% magnesium. And you said you had some as low as 9, and we've got just a couple of spots on our farm that are that low. A lot of the time we're fighting the too high an amount of magnesium in our base saturation. And this is, there's a couple of things. One thing with magnesium I know is that it's not very available in cold soils. And so the idea of putting a little bit in the furrow is something that's pretty interesting to me because, hey, we have poor availability in the spring. Just to ask all the cattle producers that are putting out magnesium supplements for grass tetany. So when their cattle are grazing sure. pastures in the spring, they're getting some mag. It's kind of the same thing.
Well, that's kind of what I felt like. Of course, I thought, and also too, I thought maybe about putting it in the furrow, being that my base saturation really wasn't, you know, that far off, except for those super low spots. You know, I realized with you fight needing more nitrogen, and if there might be something, you know, if it might be binding up with your potassium and making it less available. So I also am concerned about those issues too.
Yeah, and there's only one way to find out, and you're going for it and trying something new. I really appreciate that. That's awesome. Good luck.
Well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate you taking my call.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Keith. Good luck here going into spring.
Thank you.
We've got Dell with us right now up in Michigan with the question. Dell, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
All right. We were talking about nitrogen a little bit earlier, and you're thinking about compost. Tell us what you're up to.
Okay, I make a lot of compost every winter, and I did have a source of manure to add to my leaves to make compost.
Sure.
But that kind of dried up, and now I use urea, 4300. I think it's 43 or 4200.
Okay.
Okay, my question is, the money I spend to make the compost by buying urea, do I lose that money, or is the nitrogen still in the compost when I spread it?
Dell, for the most part, that nitrogen is still going to be there. Now, I'm not going to tell you it's going to be super available. So if you own the ground, eventually over the next 20 years, hopefully you're going to get that nitrogen out. But the problem is, if you rent the ground and you are only going to have it for another year or two, there's going to be a bunch of that nitrogen that's still in that 2 years from now, and somebody else is going to get that benefit, not you.
I wondered about that. Thank you very much. I really enjoy your program and your show. Thank you.
You bet. Yeah, thanks, Dale. Yeah, that's an interesting question when we're talking about compost. And, you know, it comes back to organic matter. What we are doing with composting, we're basically creating what I would call organic matter or thereabouts. And the whole thing is, when you have organic matter in soil, and this is another thing we're going to talk about at our Secrets of High Yield Fields workshop on Tuesday, the South Dakota state record holder, the new state record holder for soybeans, we tested his soil in his high-yield areas. He had 5.9% organic matter at 18 to 24 inches deep. And you go, oh my goodness, that's amazing. That's fantastic soil. Well, the whole thing is this. With organic matter, it releases every year for free nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. That's great. Now, it's great if you're the recipient of that. To Dell's point, he's the guy working on building that. And it's just like for all the no-tillers out there, even for us doing strip-till, we're building our soil's organic matter. That's fine, but the thing is, we're investing money every year in effect to do that. It's requiring more nitrogen for us to raise a crop when we're building organic matter. It's going to require less nitrogen for us to raise a crop when we're depleting soil organic matter, or if we're just, let's say, remaining flat. So it's somewhat complicated, but I'm just trying to say you can invest long-term for your soil. You can extract nutrients from your soil. And a lot of that has to do with what are you doing with the organic matter? How are you treating that?
All right, Brian, let's jump back into Justin's question from New Jersey. He had some questions. He had got some ground that his father-in-law had that hadn't been fertilized for about 10 years. He put some lime on it. He did some one-acre grids and just looking for a little direction on where to head.
Okay, so let me just give you the quick stats on this. I went to every page that he had there, and I just wrote some stuff down. So his soil pH is 5.2, and one of his questions was if variable rate would be worth it. Yes, absolutely, variable rate would be worth it because you've got 4.4 pH all the way up to 5.8 pH. That's a pretty big variance. And if you put the same amount of lime on the 5.8 as you do the 4.4, you're going to have a problem. Either the 4.4 won't be high enough in the end or the 5.8 will be too high. So if it was me, yes, absolutely, I would do some variable rate lime. The soil is light, 4.9 cation exchange capacity. That's very light. He actually had 49 parts per million of phosphorus, which is fantastic for that light of soil. He only had 42 parts per million of potassium. We almost never see soils where there is less potassium there than there is phosphorus. So That's the one unique thing that I noticed on this particular soil test. Now, his percentage for base saturation K is at 2.2. It's not horrific because his soil is so light, but he needs a lot of potassium. I mean, that's the big thing for raising great crops going forward. His hydrogen level is really high, but when he gets that lime out there, that hydrogen's going to come down. And like I say, I would be applying potassium. I may even apply a little bit of magnesium. He's only at 9.4% base saturation K, 9.4. I also looked at his micronutrients. Boron, 0.2 parts per million. Copper, 0.9 parts per million. Those are really low. So I'm going to do something about those. The thing with copper, it's not quite to the degree of phosphorus, but it's pretty immobile in soil. So even on light soil like that, you can apply some copper. If you get a little too much on, it'll be there next year. Boron, on the other hand, can leach, especially in that light of soil, and with the rainfall you have, if you have an abnormally high rainfall year, you're probably going to lose a lot of your boron if you put too much on. But you're only at 0.2 parts per million on boron, and all crops need some boron. They're definitely going to need more than 0.2 parts per million, so I'd make sure that I'm applying those leachable nutrients every year, like boron, sulfur, and obviously nitrogen, for crops that need those.
All right. Thanks for the questions, Justin. We really appreciate that. Got a couple of questions here from Gary. Maybe we'll get one in before the break. He said, we demoed a Capello cornhead this fall, chopping cornhead, very aggressive, almost no loss at the header. Just wonder if you've had a similar experience with the heads we see running on your combines.
Yeah, it's pretty good. The first headers that we got from Capello, we had to make a couple modifications to that, and as time went on, it got better. But that's one of the big things, is you got to really pay attention to what you are going to have for loss and just monitor that. Work with whatever company you're dealing with. Sometimes there are adjustments that can be made, or extra things that can be added to the head to help reduce the loss.
Right. His other question was, we're struggling with rye, with rotor loss and high volume of straw. Just wondering, have you tried the new Estes XPR concaves, or are you still using the previous models? Yeah, that's a great question. The XPRs just came out, and I don't know if we have that on all machines. I think we do on one machine.
Did we get that on one this fall?
I think we have it on one machine.
I don't even remember. Sorry.
Yep. No, they've been good as well. Hey, Gary, thanks for the questions. We'll be right back with more of your questions after this.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits, from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
A pasture should have two things: grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit NoWeedsNoBrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true, AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today on Farmer Friday, taking your calls and questions either by email, radio@agphd.com, or by phone, 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head up to Michigan. We got John with us right now. John, how's it going?
Good. How are you today?
Good. Are you guys enjoying some nice snowfall up there?
Well, yeah, we've had a lot of snow days this year, so...
so they're happy.
They're happy. Mom's not, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, until June when they have to stay in school for an extra week, but...
That's what I keep telling them.
So what are you working on? What are you getting ready for next spring?
Well, been to the farm show in Louisville here this week, and we're just kind of waiting for the weather to break. We got a little machinery to work on yet. We got most of our inputs bought, so I guess just put a few finishing touches on some equipment and we should be ready to roll, I hope.
Okay, let me ask you a question now. You mentioned a farm show, and that's one of the cool things over the winter as a farmer is there's lots of opportunities to go see equipment and products and chat with other people in the industry about what's new and what's exciting. Is there anything you're looking for at the farm show? Are you saying, man, I just need a better way of doing this with my plant, or I need a better way of taking care of this problem out in my fields?
You know, it's one of those things, sometimes I don't know it, I need it till I see it kind of thing. You know, I mean, I think we got our equipment kind of the way we want it, but sometimes you see something new that you didn't know about or something that just makes life a little bit easier, and I guess those are the kinds of things I was looking for this year.
What's your crop mix going into this year? What are you going to be putting in the ground?
Well, we're pretty much a corn, bean, wheat rotation, and we're just going to kind of stick with our normal acres. I mean, they fluctuate a little bit, but we're not swinging one way or another. I'd sure like to see the bean market get a little fire under them.
Oh, me too.
Really happy to grow beans for sub $9. You know, we got kind of a poor basis in our area, which really kind of is a double whammy for us, you know, but I can never outguess the market, so we'll just kind of stick with our normal plan, and that always just seems to work the best for us.
Yeah, Brandon and I have been debating this a lot this winter as we've traveled around, and my feeling is what I'm taking away, I'm talking to a lot of growers east of us into the center part of the Corn Belt and the center part of the country saying, well, I'm going to stay where I'm at. And then as we come west, I start hearing more guys say, you know, I don't know if I'm going to do beans. I might shift some acres over to corn. Brian feels like the acre shift may be a little bigger than I think, but I don't think the acre shift's as big as what some of the analysts have been saying. I guess we'll see as we get towards spring and stuff actually goes in the ground. But for me, one of the cool things I'm watching going into 2019.
You know, in my little corner of the world, I hear the same thing. None of my buddies are making big switches yet, you know, and, for me, beans are kind of a thorn on my side. I mean, we've seen just steady yield increases in corn over the years, and we're just not doing that with beans, you know. And I guess we had some pretty good bean yields this year, but there's always farms that drag us down, and those poor farms are just always a pain in the neck to me, you know. And if I had the bin space to be 100% corn, I probably would. I like growing corn. I like looking at corn. And for me, that's where the money is. I'm just not set up to handle all my bushels.
And that's exactly that the problem that we've got. And I think what's fun, you know, talking to, we get a chance about every week to talk to some guys in Chicago on the show here about what they think is going to happen. And they think, oh, you know, there's going to be some acres of corn. Okay, well, where are they going to store that corn? Because bins don't just pop up overnight. Drying facilities don't just pop up overnight. And I get it. I mean, we've all got a little bit of room for flex, but maybe not as much as they're thinking. I guess we'll see how it plays out. Well, John, thank you so
that's
much.
Right.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, that what really adds to the profit in corn for us is being able to store it, wait for basis improvement, deliver it in the winter straight to the ethanol plant. You know, I mean, if I had to sell bushels off the combine, pay drying, and sell it at a local elevator, I mean, it just takes too much of your check, you know.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. I think the same way. A lot of times we're looking at, well, what's it going to be in March, or what's it going to be looking like in January ahead, not just what's harvest time delivery look like for us.
Right, right.
Bet. Well, thanks a lot, John. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck here going into spring.
Okay, take care.
We've got Ron with us now down in Kansas. Ron, you had some weather come through today.
Yeah, a little bit of a surprise, but we're lucky it didn't get as bad as what they kind of forecast.
Well, it seems like the first few storms that came through the country, Kansas was like dead center on the agenda. What did you get this time? Did you get rain or did you get snow?
We had snow, and I'm going to say maybe no more than 2 inches.
Okay, well, that you can handle that. That's not too bad.
Yes.
Yeah, it was. I've been watching.
An abundance of moisture.
I've been watching that weather, and you guys were kind of right on that bubble where I think you were pretty warm yesterday until the temperature just all fell off, and here you go, you catch snow the next day. Just crazy.
Yes, it's been a year of extremes. It just has.
So what does that mean for you? I mean, what does a winter wheat crop look like? What does that change, you know, for guys in the field that say, man, it's going to be wet at planting time this year, or is it just too early to tell?
Well, in a lot of cases in our area here, and I think it's a pretty good part of the state, we just don't know yet because there's a lot of wheat that goes in after bean. And you know how late bean harvest was, and so there's quite a bit that's just even hasn't emerged or just poking through. So it's just too early to tell.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, the markets are always reacting, you know, one way or the other. And now, granted, there's been maybe not on this go-round, but I think it's kind of funny. Everybody always thinks, well, one big storm is going to make or break everything. But, gosh, we got a little while to go here before we get into spring. How are you sitting on your farm? Are you going to shift things around this year? Are you planning on the same crop rotation?
Well, I hate to say this, but I'm still kind of undecided. I got quite a bit of my fertilizer bought, but you know, we are extremely wet, and we're going to need, you know, some pretty decent drying time. And I didn't get any anhydrous put on last fall.
Yep.
And that's going to be a tight window. And then I'm concerned about, well, not only being wet, compaction. I hate to say it, but I'm still kind of up in the air yet.
You're not alone, that's for sure. That's why I asked the question, because I was just down in Kansas here, I don't know, a week and a half ago or something like that, and I heard the same thing from some other growers of, hey, we didn't get that fall work done that we were hoping to get done, and by the way, I might plant some beans just because they don't cost much to put in the ground, but I might not plant any if the market looks as bad as it looks, and I know, it's just a head-scratching kind of year.
It is, and you just kind of hit it right on the head. The fertilizer prices down here have dramatically went up, and it's making beans a lot more attractive than what it did 60 days ago.
Yeah, guys that we work with had just sent us, Brian and me, a text, I think this morning, and he had an analysis on fertilizer prices and just how it's catching some guys off guard if they didn't get the fall stuff on, and now all of a sudden they're calling and saying, hey, what about getting it on in the spring, and finding out, ooh, that doesn't look so good either. So it's going to be interesting for sure.
That's true. And then another factor I'm concerned about is if it stays wet and I can't get anhydrous on, not only me, but a lot of producers may want to switch to either liquid or dry. and then you start looking at the logistics of that, it's going to really put a pinch, our retailers in a pinch, because may not be having a supply on hand, and so it could be just one headache after another. But we've dealt with it before. We'll get through it.
Yeah, we'll find a way. That's for sure. We will get a crop in. It just may not be the way that everybody was planning to do it in the first place. But like you say, we've been there. We'll make it through. Hey, Ron, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Hopefully, you get some sunny, warm, dry weather here coming up soon.
It'll come. Just be patient.
It will. I just hope we don't have to wait until April for it. It's Farmer Friday on our show today. You can join the conversation at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Ideal for herbicide applications, the Ultra Low Drift Large Air Inducted Droplets were designed to eliminate driftable fines without sacrificing coverage. Its thick three-dimensional pattern creates multiple angles for the spray to cover the target. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro Liquid Fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro Liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio on Farmer Friday. Taking your questions at radio@agphd.com is our email, or 844-44-AG-PHD is our phone number. Got Steve up in Michigan. Boy, this is a good Michigan show here. I think you're the third caller, Steve, from Michigan. Are you guys getting bad weather up there, or what's going on?
Well, it's pretty nice now. It's 23 degrees instead of minus whatever it was, and we're getting rid of some of the ice finally. So
awesome. So what's on your mind?
Well, I've heard a lot about it, this phantom yield loss where guys talk about if you're picking corn after or shelling corn after 25% moisture, you've got some magical yield loss, and I'm wondering about it.
Well, it's not exactly magical yield loss. There is, yeah. There, I mean, the drier the corn gets, and you know this already. I mean, the more corn ends up falling on the ground, and also just the more pieces of that corn break off, fly off, dust off, everything, the drier the corn gets. So there are a lot of the high yield guys that'll talk about, you know, in the range of 20 to 24%. And even for us, I really like taking our corn out now at 20 to 22% for a couple reasons. Number one, we absolutely don't have as much loss at the header and through going through the combine. You know, is it gaining us much yield? I don't know that it's gaining much, but a little bit. And then, you know, occasionally we do have, Darren likes to talk about how it literally every year, Steve, Darren will say, our corn's falling apart. And it's like August. I'm going, oh my gosh, Darren, thanks for getting everybody all panicked. Like it's all going to fall down. And I understand, yes, corn is falling apart. But, you know, legitimately, he's got a point that if we get too late and sometimes we get down to 17-18%, sometimes all of a sudden we have 20 bushel yield loss and it's like, oh my gosh, why weren't we out there earlier? At least if I'm harvesting at 20, that almost never happens to us. But anyway, the other side of this, the reason why I like it personally, I used to run our grain dryers on our farm for many years and now I've kind of turned that over to somebody else. But what I always found is if we get that harvest done a few days earlier, I've got a better chance for warmer weather. And man, we can sail that corn through when the weather's warm. So even though sometimes when the moisture's a little higher, as long as the weather's warm, it really doesn't take that much more propane. And now we just got done that much earlier because we try to do everything ourselves on our farm each fall. So we want to do all our soil sampling. We want to do the fall tillage, fall fertilizer, get everything done in the fall. And, you know, the earlier I can get done with harvest, the earlier I can get the rest of the stuff taken care of. But yes, there is some loss once you get below 25%. I really don't think it's much until you get down below 20. But once you get below 20, you've just got a lot more risk.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for the call. You know, one of the things too that I didn't mention there with Steve is just the overall cost on things. And if you've got your own drying setup, then like we do, and we got a really good drying setup paid off long time ago, it does not take much. It doesn't cost us much. We also have a great big propane tank, so we can bring in semi-loads of propane. So our cost for drying is very, very, very minimal. Now, if you don't even have a drying setup, number one, I'm going to probably encourage you to look into that. But two, I understand why a guy might want to let the corn dry down out in the field. But yeah, you're taking an awful lot of risk. There is some loss no matter what. But then the other side of it is, if my corn does fall apart and I do have standability issues or anything like that, I mean, I can have that 20-30 bushel yield loss. We saw a lot of that in the fall of 2017 for the guys at Combine when the corn was above 20 in our region. They had phenomenal yields and almost no field loss. For the guys that waited until the corn got down to 15, 16, 17%, in some cases there was 50 bushels on the ground. It was just the way the year went, the wind, you know, the fact that everything had dried down quick, all that. So, you know, we want to make sure that we're timely out there in getting our harvest done. All right, we've got Trent on next from Oklahoma. Hey, Trent, how are you?
Good, how's it going?
Excellent. So what's happening in your farm right now?
Oh, we're trying to finish up some dirt work, get some strip till done, get the fertilizer put on the wheat. Just got a whole bunch of stuff going, but you gotta have the weather cooperate.
I hear you. So, do you raise some spring crops on your farm?
Yeah, we'll raise corn and beans, and last year we had some sesame, but I think I'll probably pass on that this year.
So, okay, so two questions. First of all, why are you going to pass on the sesame? Didn't like it so well?
No, you don't have very much chemical choices as far as weed control.
Sure.
And that really kind of bit us in the behind this year, and it's just not a very good fit for us, I don't think.
Yeah, yep. Here's my other question. What's the earliest you're willing to plant corn or soybeans where you farm in Oklahoma?
If I can see that, you know, we're going to not be 20-some degrees for a long time,
yep.
my my early planting date for corn is March 15th. So yep. I don't have any problems putting it in the ground as long as I don't have just really, really cold weather coming for 2 or 3 weeks in a row.
Sure. Yeah, you bet. So you mentioned you're probably going to go away from the sesame, mainly because of the herbicide choices. How about changing acres on anything else? Did you happen to put in more winter wheat this year? Are you thinking of going more corn?
We put in a little bit extra wheat this year just because we were down on numbers last year.
Yeah.
And I think we're probably going to plant a little more corn this year than normal. And we're actually going to try to plant some earlier variety soybeans down here than we have in the past and try to get to where we can get crops off sooner. That way we can get more stuff done. Instead of spending all of our time on the combine, we can get other things done.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So what
we didn't get done cutting sesame this year till December 24th.
So you've just about been farming year-round then, Trent.
Pretty much.
So what maturity do you normally plant on soybeans, and what are you going to go to now?
We're normally in the 4.7s, 4.8s, 4.9s,
sure.
Maybe some 5s. But this year, I think we're actually going to try maybe some late 3s
yeah.
and some earlier 4s. And we're also going to plant, we're going to try to plant early.
Sure.
So if I can get my corn planted and the weather's still looking okay, I'm going to go right to beans and get them in the ground.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, there are a lot more guys around the country that are talking about planting earlier on the soybean side. Well, hey, Trent, yeah. It's been great talking to you today, and we want to wish you the best of luck here in 2019. Thanks for calling in.
All right, guys. Thanks.
You bet.
All right, Brian, I got a question from Evan, and this one is a really good one because we've run into this with some of the testing we've done. He said, I'm wondering how I can incorporate products like Jumpstart and Quick Roots at seeding time. We're raising durum wheat. It's a very poor nutrient scavenger. We know those things could help, but here's the problem. We use a seed nutrient coating with zinc and copper, and we put a heavy granular blend of zinc and copper in the seed row. Nobody's been able to answer this question, as we know the zinc and copper will smoke the fungus and the microbes in the Jumpstart and Quick Roots. What do you suggest? Yeah, those microbes can definitely hurt survivability of the microbes. There's no doubt about that. I know when we looked at, we were doing some micronutrients in furrow, and we were strongly advised not to do that by the maker of Quick Roots. They said they had done testing on that and it didn't turn out well for them. So what you could do is start putting those micros off to the side instead.
Yeah.
And then leave your microbial products in the furrow. But I get it. If you're using a seed treatment with that coating, I would switch personally. I haven't really liked the micronutrients on the seed coating. I've been much happier with them just off to the side a little bit. And that way you could put your microbes, your Quick Roots, your Jumpstart, whatever you want to use right on the seed.
Yeah, here's our concern in our testing, and there's been all kinds of testing around the country. We really, really, really worry about seed germination. And I don't care what the seed is, and I don't care necessarily all that much what the nutrient is, but yes, you know that zinc and copper can be hard on stuff. So it's super rate dependent, and obviously it's going to be weather and soil dependent. Well, like I was saying earlier in the show, we have enough risk in farming as it is. So I just get really concerned about these seed coatings that have nutrients on there. Sometimes it can work, but I just worry that that could potentially backfire on us. And even if it only is a problem 1 out of 10 years, that's one time too many. So yeah, I would lean toward exactly what Darren said. Take it off the seed, use some microbes on the seed instead.
Thanks for the question, Evan. Thanks to everybody who called in or sent in questions today. We really appreciate that. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.